Is the volume on Winamp up?
A business? Is it easy or difficult?
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
It looks like you're all spread out. You need to be in a single file line directly over the railroad tracks. If the tracks are off your left window or your right window, you're not over them. You need to be looking at railroad tracks 12 o'clock. Okay? Right directly ahead. You need to fly directly over the tracks, 1,800 feet, 90 knots. Cessna 150 approaching Fizz, rock your wings. Cessna 150, follow the tracks in for runway 9, keep your speed up and monitor 118.5. There's another 150 approaching Fizz, rock your wings. Cessna 150 approaching Fizz, rock your wings. The Champ approaching Fizz, rock your wings. The Champ, thank you. Make a right turn, Champ. Make a right turn, fly eastbound, enter left.
How exciting is that? Listening to Oshkosh Radio. Actually, that's a recording, I think, from 2001 or 2003. But, boy, that's just exciting. Are you there, Al, and are you excited? Are you rocking your wings?
Man, nice rock.
Nice rock. Absolutely. How many times do we love to hear that?
I love to hear it all the time. You know, I was listening to, I got to be honest, I was listening to the liveatc.net feed of Fisk arrival, and holy cow. You know, you could count every single person, you know, that there's more nice rocks issued than that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and although there are a lot of mistakes, a lot of people not familiar with their NOTAMs. Matter of fact, you know what? I hate to start the show off this way. And by the way, this is Mark Heppner with Simple Flight Radio, and who are you?
I am Bob Saget. Not kidding.
Yeah.
I am Al Waterloo coming live at you. Can you believe it?
Yeah, but something tells me we're not in our normal setting.
Yes, no,
here.
Maybe so.
Where are you? You're not here, and I'm not there.
No, you certainly aren't. I am overlooking a beautiful parking garage in Duluth, Minnesota at the Sheraton Hotel. It's awesome. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Where are you?
Well, I'm in my house because I was going to be all alone at Papa Whiskey Kilo doing this broadcast since you called me and said, you know what? I'm going to be in Duluth. And I want to know, every time you end up going away and I'm all set up to stand in technology-wise, I've got Winamp, I've got Audacity, I've got the microphones, this is no problem. And I was probably six times I tested. The volumes, the levels were right. I go away for 10 minutes. And the volume shuts down automatically on one of the programs to zero. And I how does that happen?
There must be like little Simple Flight Aviation Radio leprechauns that come in and just and play with the knobs and stuff like that. You know, it'd be they're just there to they're having fun, but little do they know that they're really getting in the way of our feng shui.
Yeah, feng shui. So anyway, getting back to feng shui. I mean, this is Oshkosh week, and so we're going to be talking a lot about planes and pilots and places, the three P's, if you will. Matter of fact, our guest, planes and people, I think he holds the record for that. We'll be talking about that in just a second. But to place to start, because we're listening to ATC Conversations, and the I had the chance, and this has already blown one of the surprise, I had an opportunity to go into that building that says no tours in front of it, and of course I'm talking about the air traffic control tower at Oshkosh, even though, again, it says no tours in it, but you happen to know somebody and you get invited up there. And it was so exciting, but to talk to them about how the show was going, and they are very respectful of the pilots. They love the fact that they get to be there, but not all of the pilots, let's call it a vocal minority, if you will, or a visible minority, are at their best behavior. They said one pilot showed up and had no clue that there was any event at Oshkosh.
Wow.
Is that all you can say is wow?
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's like a...
How do you show up to Oshkosh this week and say, what's going on?
Yeah, what's... Why is it... There's a note, there's an arrival, there's an air show? What is that?
Yeah, well, they showed up not knowing that there was any procedures.
That's, so did he say how they handled it?
You know, they didn't, and I was actually talking to Wanda, who, and by the way, if you don't know Wanda is kind of the person, the boss of making Oshkosh happen from an ATC perspective, and she actually, as I understand it, is, this may be her last year doing this, which is sad, but we all have to move on at times, I guess.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, she's been doing it for a long time, and she's been doing, I think it's been a really good, you know, trek for her, and she, you know, she's done a great job with the whole air traffic control, situation there, and, you know, really has generated it to be an excitement for the controllers themselves. As far as I understand, it's a pretty big honor, and, it's almost like winning the lottery if you're picked to go work Oshkosh.
Well, and I'll even position it, lottery to me is about luck. And getting a position here is earning it. So I think of it as the all-star team, whether it's a sports analogy or whatever, that these guys earn the right to represent ATC from all of their various controlling facilities. There's a lot of O'Hare guys and gals there, Midway, Milwaukee, obviously that's where Wanda's from, Atlanta, all across the country. People earn the right to be asked to come here, which is, when you see them, you got to congratulate them on earning that right.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It sounds like a great time. I had an opportunity to go up there last year. And you know what? You almost feel like it's a special treat. You know, the time that I was there, you know, it was 105 degrees. I was smart enough to wear all black and not bring a hat. So by the time 4 o'clock rolled around, you know, we get this call that said, hey, the tower let us up, and it's like this air-conditioned oasis, and I think I probably drank 3/4 of the Hinckley Schmidt water jug that was kind of sitting there next to the phone for all the controllers.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you, that's not really Hinckley and Schmidt.
It's definitely a nice treat.
Yeah, that's not Hinckley and Schmidt. That's like more like Mogan and David. No, I'm just kidding.
David?
I'm kidding. with our many miles
awesome.
Between
but
us.
Hey, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you this about the Oshkosh Tower. Did you see, did they have the little dots taped up on the windows?
They did.
Awesome.
Yeah,
you want to explain that real quick?
Do you want to explain it or do you want me to?
No, you could go for it.
Okay, so I'm quick to go for it. So the dots on the runways, they taped those same color dots onto the cab windows. So when you look that direction, you're looking at the dot and you're also looking at the dot on the window and on the runway at the same time. And so they know there's 1,500 feet between dots because there's normally a 3,000 foot requirement for simultaneous landing, but they get a waiver to 1,500. And so they can say, okay, land on the pink dot, you're landing on the blue dot, and they can just visually see it right on the windows there. It's almost like a heads-up display.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're drinking a little bit more of that Mogan David,
awesome.
Aren't you?
I love it. You know. Yeah, exactly.
We have a little delay, I think. I'm saying something, then
totally.
You respond to it a few seconds later. I think we got a little technology delay going here.
Yeah, it probably is a little bit, but, you know, cool. That sounds great.
What? All of a sudden you went away. Okay. This is going to be a little bit of sounding like you are drinking here on this show, but that's okay. We'll get through it. And speaking of drinking.
Yeah. Well, hey, why don't you go ahead, Mark, and,
Yeah. Al?
Yeah. there's an unbelievable delay going on, which is really gnarly. So I'm just going to let you, take it and then, just say my name. Hey, Al. And then I'll chime in.
I will. You know, it's, one of my children is in TV news and sports, and I don't laugh anymore, but you see it in every station. The person in the studio turning over to the person in the field, they talk, and then you zoom in on the person in the field, then you count to seven before they respond. It's still one of those things you think we'd be beyond at this state of our technology, growth, but it still impacts us. So, hey, Al, do you agree?
Yeah.
All right.
Why, yes, I do. Back to you, Mark. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, that's it. That's very, very true. But, hey, we have a regular event, and this marks last week we had a very special, anniversary, if you will. Simple Flight Aviation Radio turned the big number one last year. But there's a very special birthday event for something that's been regular on the Simple Flight Aviation Show. And that is your infamous Sunday Night Chuckle. We've gone 52 weeks, laughing our tailbones off. At least I have and all that. But, on your very first joke that you came in on a show and told, do you remember what that one was?
Was it Santa Claus?
Yes, it was. It was. That was awesome.
Yeah, actually the reason
that was absolutely hilarious.
The reason why I remember it is because I didn't think you would laugh as hard as you did, and it would, you know, kind of gave me confidence to take it to every week since then.
Right. Yeah. It was awesome. I couldn't remember the first. It was the first time that you did it. It was I just had this vision in my head of Santa Claus and like you know, just wearing the hat and the beard, but not the vest or not the red jacket. But he was in one of those like short white sleeves, plain tie t-shirts you see the FAA inspectors wearing, right, with, you know, just getting in this thing with a shotgun. You know, just gets in. It's hilarious.
Yeah, just for those.
But anyway, you have a tradition.
Yeah. Go ahead.
you have a tradition to carry on. And, so let's make it official. Let's make it the 1 year anniversary of the Sunday Night Chuckle. So, what do you have lined up for us this week?
Well, now, this is a little worrisome. I wasn't thinking about it as the 1 year anniversary, and so I kind of picked out one that I thought was pretty cute. And I just warning you guys, you gotta have a little bit of a memory and stick with me on this one. And since we started off talking about Al drinking out of the Mogan David wine, fountain, let's talk a little bit about, poor John. John and his wife Suzanne were, you know, constantly getting battles about John's drinking. You know, he didn't think he was an alcoholic, but let's just say once a week he went out and imbibed himself, and so he promised that he wouldn't do it anymore. And one night, it certainly is one night per week that he came in, he staggered home very late, you know, after an evening with his drinking buddy. And so he didn't want to wake up Suzanne, right? He gets home, it's dark out and dark in the house, and he can't let her know that he's been drinking. So he tiptoed as quietly as he could toward the stairs. And it was leading up, of course, to their upstairs bedroom, but he misjudged that bottom step. And as he caught himself, by grabbing the banister, his body swung around and he landed heavily on his backside. And he had a couple of bottles of whiskey, small bottles of whiskey in each back pocket, and they broke and made the landing especially painful. So he managed not to yell, and he sprung up as much as you can spring up after you've been drinking. And he pulled down his pants and he looked in the hall mirror, because the mirror is right there, and he looked around the mirror And he could see that his butt cheeks, if you will, where they were cut up and bleeding from all the glass. So he managed he quietly, you know, right? He's like bleeding all over. So he quietly gets to the downstairs bathroom, opens up the medicine cabinet, and he finds a full box of Band-Aids. And so he goes back to the mirror, and he looks in the mirror and sees where he's bleeding. Of course, he began putting all the Band-Aids on as best he could see each piece, you know, which was bleeding from. And then he took the Band-Aid box, hid it back where it was, and then he shuffled and stumbled all the way to bed. And then in the morning, he woke up with a searing pain in both his head and his butt. And he wakes and opens his eyes and sees his wife, Suzanne, staring at him from across the room. And she said, "You were drunk again last night, weren't you?" And he kind of looked back, and John said, "Well, why would you say such a mean thing to me?" And Suzanne said, "Well, it could be the open front door. It could be the broken glass at the bottom of the stairs. Or it could be the drops of blood trailing through the house. Could even be your bloodshot eyes, but mostly, it's all those Band-Aids stuck on the hall mirror."
That's what you call a swing and a miss with the, not with the joke, but with the Band-Aids. Swing, bada, 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 swing, bada, bada, swing, bada.
Did you get it?
Yeah.
Okay. I floated a trial balloon and it didn't go over too well, so I'm glad you got it. I'm thinking all of our listeners are pilots, so they probably got it too. You'll have to let me know how the tweet line goes because you're running tweets tonight.
Yeah. If Al got it, then that means everybody got it.
There you go. Woohoo! Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. Happy anniversary. So did you end up, you said you were at Oshkosh this year and you got one of the coveted tower tours. Did you end up flying there?
You know, I have to tell you, the weather was perfect. Everything was perfect. And as you will soon hear, I had my best Oshkosh year ever, except for one thing. I did not fly once this week because of plane availability. Yeah, I only had one plane available on Tuesday when I went, and the plane I had available...
You did not go to Osh?
What's that? Al? Al Waterloo. I don't know where Al Waterloo went. It must be that place he's in. So I'm going to continue the story when Al comes back online. Let me see if I can figure out what went wrong here. Yep, I'm off. Let's see if we can't connect up again with Al. So while we're waiting for that, I went on Tuesday. There was a plane that I just didn't have a lot of experience in. And so knowing that I would have to be at low altitudes, at slow speeds, and unusual maneuvers to make certain approaches, I decided, you know, I'm going to turn this down so we don't hear that so loud. I decided to not go other than just to drive. So we got up real early. Is that you, Al? Nope, he's not on. We'll give him a second. We'll call him back. And so I drove, and it was a great day. We'll hear about that. And then Saturday, I had two planes lined up, one coming out of Annual, which ended up getting stuck in Annual because of a broken grease fitting. And then another plane just came out of Annual. Past Annual, and Austin and I go up on Friday night just to burn some fuel so we could put four people in it. And, turned out it had bad plugs. I don't know how it came out of Annual with a good rating, but, so I ended up having to drive again. So it was, an interesting day, or let's say it was a perfect day, made little less so because of the, having to drive. But that aside, just great, great day. All right, I'm going to try one more time and see if I can get Mr. Waterloo on the phone. So hold on here. And if this doesn't work, we'll call him on his cell phone. We use Skype. But it ended. All right, I'm going to call him on his cell. Let's see if I know how to do this. Sorry for the extra noises here, ladies and gentlemen. We got an iPhone, so it's got the connector on the bottom. Oh, now he's calling. Is that Al?
No, I'm going to call him here.
The embarrassment of live radio. So let me go to the telephone. And again, instead of me just talking and filling up air, maybe I should play some music in the background. And let's try this. I'm going to dial him on his cell phone, ladies and gentlemen, and see where we're dialing now. Two rings.
Well, that was awkward.
That is awkward, but I got you back.
All right, that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's actually a little bit better quality than I think we were having anyway, and you can probably hear me live rather than with a delay.
That's perfect.
Yeah, that's it.
I was having some awkward moments there, I think, with hearing some of your jokes. I thought they were funny as all get up, but this is better.
Yeah. So I went on and told people that I drove because of a couple airplane problems on both Tuesday and Saturday, but had a great time at Oshkosh, and we missed you.
Yeah, I missed, I really missed going. You know, there was I kind of want to share my perspective of Oshkosh, after we have our guest on, but yeah, no, it sounded like a great show, and, I've got some pretty neat observations from my end, even though I never even got close to Oshkosh.
Yeah, well, you could have been the guy that flew up and didn't know there was, hey, what's going on here? Why all the airplanes?
Yeah, that was me. I would do something like that. No, there was I was actually doing the next best thing from going to Oshkosh, and that was out going, actually flying. So it wasn't a total lost cause, but it was still a good time.
Yeah, I was mentally flying. It was so cool. Maybe we'll save most of it for Hangar Talk tonight. But I started to take down notes of all the new experiences that I had, despite being at Oshkosh, you know, many times before. And as I said, this was by far my best Oshkosh ever in terms of level of enjoyment and not wanting to come home. You know, it was one of those.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Without a doubt.
And what
this is like, I kind of feel like we're in the Sioux City DC-10 accident going on, because, you know, kind of we're having some technical difficulties, right?
Yeah.
You know, with our Skype and our distance and everything like that. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get David on the line here.
Well, I'm thinking you have his phone number. He may not be expecting it. Can you add him to this call?
That's the one thing that the downfall about my phone, and this is like the United 232 incident where they call maintenance and say, "Hey, we have 3 hydraulic failures," and they're like, "Well, that's impossible." But I don't have a way to add somebody on my phone to a second call because I have Sprint, which doesn't support that.
Oh. Well, I don't want to give his number over the line, but is there some way you can text it to me and...
Yeah. We'll get you going on that. So why don't you expect a message from me here, and then I'll write it here. But yeah, this, I think we're going to have should we talk about our guest here real quick?
Yeah, we should. You know, and this is perfect guest for a week when we're talking about lots of planes. How many ever tens of thousands of planes? What is it, 12,000 planes or something at Oshkosh? And lots of people, 500,000 people that show up at Oshkosh. I think we're about to talk to a gentleman that I don't know if he owns any records or not, but he's flown 139 planes. He's met all kinds of people over many years of flying and just written a book, a memoir, if you will, of traveling around the world in both on a ship and then also in airplanes. and his many years flying it. It's just, I haven't gotten through the entire memoir, but, just seeing the list is like awe-inspiring.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's, you know, there was a, I'm looking at David was kind enough to send a copy of the book to me, and, you know, on the back of the book it says, David has led a life, that others can only dream about. And it's like, you know, what from all the nautical stuff to the aeronautical stuff and, you know, everything in between. It's just, it's a really great story. You know, this guy could tell you, it sounds like he could tell you a story, a different story, you know, for your entire life, and you'd never get bored of it.
Yeah. So I don't even know if I can receive a message from you while I'm on the phone.
Okay. This is, you know what, I keep saying that, you know, people love the live radio show because of it's the same reason why they love NASCAR. They don't go to see the cars run, it's sort of to see the cars go and crash, and, you know, this is certainly one of these, and I'm kind of embarrassed about it, but, you know what, I've got one gripe about traveling, and that is the power and bandwidth of hotel internet. You know, they have it like dialed way back so that Skype doesn't work that well.
Well, you know what? I just got your message, so I'm going to try and bring David in.
Okay.
All right. So you may be put on hold when I push this button, and hopefully that's all you
all
are.
All right.
I'll be back with you in a second while the audience and I go ahead and get David Allen on the phone. So hold on a second, Alan. Alex?
All right.
Actually, I hear you, so we can talk while I dial this. And
cool.
I think I say call. Don't ever do this. Let's see. Call. And let's see what happens. Here we go. He's going to say, what? This isn't supposed to happen like this.
Hello.
Hey, David?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Mark Eppner. And Al, are you there too? If Al isn't, I'm going to push a button here and get him on there. Al, are you there?
I am.
David, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, we're sorry. We had a blow up on our Skype, so thank goodness we had your phone number, and I think it's actually a much better connection, so all good things happen when you just kind of stick to it.
Okay, I'm going to put you on speaker.
All right.
Okay, you got me?
I got you. And welcome.
The Doc Show.
Yeah, welcome to Simple Flight Aviation Radio, David. We're so excited to talk to you tonight. Just leading up to this call, Al and I were talking about Oshkosh and all the people and all the planes that I saw over my 2 days there. And after reading your memoir, obviously we saw and read a lot about, you've got a few planes under your belt and a few people that you've met over the years, haven't you?
That's true. Yeah, I got 140 airplanes in a logbook.
I don't think there are logbooks that hold that much.
they're there.
That is so exciting. Yeah, 140, you know, and I have to say, when I read some of the memoirs, you know, I read that I think you got the bug, you said, at age 5 and a half?
More like 6.
6. Okay, well, we'll round up. And that's so like the rest of us, but I probably have 10 or 15 airplanes, and you're not that much older than me, that I've flown. So the difference between 10 or 15 or 20, whatever it is, and 140 is pretty significant. So you're kind of a guy, I think, that went after the dream.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell us a little bit about that. How it came about and your love of aviation and tell us a little bit about that love of aviation, how you got started.
I'll be glad to. I was born in San Francisco, 1:20 in the morning at, age of 9 months, and I thought the doctors were ugly, but the nurses were good looking, so I figured I'd stick around for a while. So anyway, my dad had an adventurous soul, and in 1945, 1946. He bought an old UC-78 Cessna T-50 bamboo bomber, Coronado, whatever you want to call it, and it was used as a utility aircraft. It was a wooden fabric aircraft that sat on its tail and had two 75 Jakes in it, and wooden propellers. You couldn't feather or anything. And he had a guy named Johnny Winters that was a 8th Air Force B-17 pilot. And I used to go up with him all the time, and I almost get wiggle my way into the right seat. And Johnny told me, kid, if you're going to ride with me, you're going to learn how to keep this airplane level and the wings level. I couldn't get to the rudder pedal, so he had to do that. And he taught me how to use a trim tab, so by the age of 6, I could fly an airplane in the air. We did some turns and so on. And that started it. I knew right then that there was nothing else I wanted to do but fly airplanes.
Wow. You know, I was at Oshkosh, as I mentioned, and they had the Cessna T-50 or Bamboo Bomber, as many people know it, there. And, of course, I remember that because I was a big fan of Sky King, and I think that was his first
airplane. Yeah. You bet. Yeah, I watch him all the time. I lost interest when we went to that 310.
I love the 310. I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you on that. But I never had the honor of flying a T-50, so.
Yeah, it was a nice airplane, you know. You get yourself in trouble with it a lot. I mean, you lose an engine run after takeoff. And if you get 20 or 30 feet, that's where you're at.
Yeah. How cool.
So is that, David, is that your favorite airplane, the T-50?
No, people ask me what my favorite airplane was, and my answer is I love them all. Anything that has wings on them, anything that has wings on it, I love them. I got checked out in a Remus, an ugly little airplane, but boy, it flew real nice.
Are you still flying?
Yeah, the guys throw a bone to me every once in a while. I was flying to Heaven and Beaver here just a couple of weeks ago. And,
wow.
So the fellow that I sold him my 170, and he always gets me out there to keep me proficient in that 170.
Yeah.
Oh, that's outstanding. But the Beaver is a really nice fun plane, or a favorite plane of mine. I had the pleasure of flying one up in the Boundary Waters in near Canada. We were going on a fishing excursion. The guy was like, "Hey, here you go," and tossed me the controls. Let me tell you that to see a Beaver show up after 2 weeks of canoeing and paddling yourself around, there's no better sight than in sound of hearing a big radio launch that comes pouring out of the woods.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. I had flown one for a long time, and I flew this one, and I came in, and she's such a big, heavy airplane and so light on the controls. And I came in and full stalled it on the numbers, and it seemed like it took me a year and a half to get to the first taxiway. I sure should be getting in, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Actually, if we're going to start doing this, when I went to Oshkosh this week, there were two Howard 500s.
Yeah.
And just beautiful airplane. I guess there's only 17. There were 17, I think, left, and two of them were there and performed. But that just is an aircraft that looked awesome. And I saw on your list of 140 airplanes that's one of the ones you've flown. Tell me about it.
That's right. Yeah, I have time in a 500 and a 250. And I'm type rated an L-18. And it was a great airplane. It was fast, maneuverable. The only thing that I didn't like about the airplane was it spread between V1 and V2, which was about 40 knots.
Wow.
So you had to rotate at V1, and you had your rear end hanging out there for about 30 knots after that until you got your V2 speed. But light, it didn't make much difference. It'd accelerate on up to V2.
Wow. So, and I read in your book the first plane that you bought, or your dad, no, let's see, you said the T-50, but I remember reading about a 1955 172 that cost all of $4,800.
That's right. Yeah, that was the first airplane my dad bought. And the airplane, sold from the factory, and it had an Omnigator in it. Do you guys know what that is?
I'm guessing what an Omni, it's something with Omni Range and Navigator, but you tell me.
Well, you had two frequencies, and you had to whistle stop tune it, and it had a crank on it, and whenever the whistle would get to peak that you were on, in those days, it was an Omni. It wasn't called a VOR or a TACAN or anything like that. It was an Omni. And it didn't make any difference where you're at. They were all the same frequency. Also, there was one frequency per tower, and I think it had an emergency frequency. It also was whistle stop. And so the airplane came brand new from the factory with a whistle stop tuner, which was, boy, that was good stuff in those days, and for $4,800.
Wow.
Wow.
$7,200 for a Cessna 180.
I'll take two.
I think at that price I'd be able to afford a partnership, half share of a partnership.
That's sure not like it is today.
No, not at all.
Without a doubt.
So tell us about the book. You know, you obviously, and I've read the foreword, but for our listeners' sake, you know, you had a purpose in writing this, and it's not only about the airplanes, but sailing around the world as well.
Yeah, it's actually two books in one. I had an interest in going to sea, and I signed on a merchant marine training vessel. She was a square rig sailing ship, 210 tons, and we proceeded to start sailing around the world. And I got sick in the Solomon Islands and had to leave her. Otherwise, I'd have gotten off with officer's papers. And as it was on that ship, I got off of her with ABS, able-bodied seaman papers. And I've always loved sailing after that. The sea's in my blood, just not as much as the air, but I love sailing vessels, and I like old-time ones. So that's the first part of the book, and it's about a third of the book, and the next two-thirds about my flying career.
And why write it? David, why write it? What was the motivation?
To write it? Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you know, everybody told me I should write a book, and I said, you know, you're out of your mind. I can't write. I've got a situation with my grandkids where I hardly ever see them. And I thought, you know, I'm going to write something down just as a diary or something for them to know about their grandpa. So I bought myself a bunch of legal pads, and I got wound up buying two cases of pens. And I started to write, and by gosh, 720 pages later, I thought, wow, this is something. And I took it down to an author company that deals with authors, and I asked them if they could put this in book form and correct the spelling. Do not ever change anything I said in this book. I don't care what you do or what you think. You write it the way I wrote it, but correct it and, you know, put the punctuations where they're supposed to be. And so they did. And I had a manuscript, and I got about three or four of them here now, and they must have let this company know, this publishing company know that I had it, and they got the manuscript and read it, called me up and said, we got to make a book out of this.
Wow.
And this company's been in business for 55 years and have been very successful, so I got high hopes for them, and that's how it became a book.
Excellent. Wow. So, you know, so many of us, and there's even been movies about how do you pass on certain things to children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever, and what would you tell them? So you got it all down.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's, I probably will have a little money left in the bank when I die, and they'll get that, of course, but I think the thing that's really great about it is that they're going to have a full 400-page book about their grandpa.
Yeah.
And that turns me on. I like that.
Good.
That's really great. You often think about the pilot logbook, and you know, there's sweet memories and very sentimental and all this, and you know, it may show a 1-hour flight between Santa Fe and Albuquerque or something like that, but Yeah, this actually puts all those, it puts meaning behind all those flight hours and trips around the world and in the sea vessels and things like that. And it's outstanding. You know, just all the stories that back up all the flight time in your logbook. So it's got to be a really nice feeling.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts, and it's true. And I had my logbook open from the very beginning. I got three logbooks, so I just went through the flights and, oh, I remember that. Yeah, let's do that. Now, memories that came back were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Things that I hadn't thought about in years.
Yeah. I don't know for you, but if this is for you guys, David, it sounds like you, but, I don't know if you ever go through your logbooks, Mark, and just kind of look through them, and it's amazing how you can almost remember every single flight and, you know, what happened on that. Even though it's just translated into ink, it's so quick for all the memories of that individual flight that should have been nothing special, and, you know, how quickly that comes back.
Oh, it really does. You're absolutely right.
You know, for me, it doesn't though, and I think you guys are more the rule and I'm somewhat the exception, but I look at some flights and some, yes, I remember, but there are so many, you know, I'm kind of going, I did that. I went there, that type of thing. So, I wish I had that gift of remembering that you two obviously have.
Oh, I sure do. Right back at the very beginning, I remember. I just love flying. It's in my soul. I was born and raised in aviation, I guess you could say.
Yes.
And they meant a lot to me. All those flights meant a lot to me, every one of them.
And I certainly agree. I would just say I violently agree, and Al knows how passionate I am about it. But in seeing all of your experience, I guess one of the questions you talk about, which is your favorite airplane, all of them. But what about, you allude to different eras of flights. You know, as technology came in, you talked about the whistle stop and now today GPS and all that. Is there a certain either year or decade or era that kind of stands out as your favorite time of flying?
Well, I guess I could say that. Second World War, I thought those were the greatest airplanes I ever flew. I flew a lot of them. And the 1940s and 50s airliners are really great, but then my oldest airplane that I flew was a 1914 AV Roe. And, you know, that airplane flew real good. You think of those old airplanes as just rag bags, you know, and they're really not. They were cutting-edge technology in 1914, and that airplane flew like an airplane that was built really well. So I have my favorite eras, but I love them all. I love them all. The 20s and 30s, some of the airplanes I flew that came back from those days were, I loved them. They were just great. They beat the heck out of you, but marvelous airplanes.
Wow. See, this, now I'm really jealous. This is just not fair. I want to have some of those experiences.
Well, you've got a lot of years ahead of you. And a lot of those airplanes are coming back into popularity. I'm amazed at what's out there right now. And I'm really, really proud of the guys that are, and the women that are refurbishing and rebuilding these old airplanes and keeping that period alive. I think that's just great.
Yeah, there's go ahead, Dale.
Oh, no, I was, a previous guest a couple months ago on our show was a gentleman who was a part of the Commemorative Air Force. I don't know if you've heard of them or been or involved with them, but
I'm a colonel.
Oh, and
it was
great.
A Confederate Air Force in my day.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like they have. Yeah, there's just a really good push to. There's so many so much history and stories. In these cockpits and airframes that just need to be preserved and told and, you know, kept flying.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. We were, in my day, we were kind of pioneers in that field. Not that many people were doing that, and we rescued every airplane we get our hands on.
One of our members of our flying club, her father is very involved with restoration, and he pulled out, Al, remind me, was that a Hellcat out of Lake Michigan?
That's the exact Hellcat, yeah.
Yeah, and he pulled it out at great expense. It was at Oshkosh this year, and I actually, on my last day there Saturday, I just happened to bump into him at lunch, and he talks about, you know, that era of flight. He wants everyone to know about the hard work, you know, the world was at war, and everyone put their best effort into building things that were, you know, gonna be high quality and protect our nation. And that's why he's hell-bent on getting as many out of Lake Michigan as possible so he can share the story as they are restored. So a lot of passion, from the heart for guys like Chuck Greenhill, who I'm referencing.
Yeah, bless them all. Get as many as you can, as far as I'm concerned. They're pulling them out of the jungles in the South Pacific, and they just pulled out I believe it was a 111 out of a lake up in Europe somewhere. And, they're just amazing what people are doing right now. It's just absolutely amazing. And I love it. I just love it. And you're right about the Second World War period, and that's what I was saying before. They built the best airplanes in the world in those days. There was nothing that could come close to them.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. So, go ahead, Al, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, ask David, you know, what's something that, you know, that you're obviously very proud of, you know, that fact right now of what people are doing with these types of airplanes, but when you're in the heyday of your flying career, what was something that you were most proud of back then in aviation?
Well, I think just about everything. I was real proud of the fact that I was a pilot for the Chicago White Sox, and we flew ball teams around. And I was real proud of this company called Cavalier. We were building up B-51 fighters for Central and South America, and we got almost all of them back. A few of them were lost, but we got almost all of them back. Almost all of those Cavaliers are still flying in this country. I'm proud of that, and I'm just proud of my career. I've been blessed with this marvelous flying career that I've had, and I'm just proud of it all.
Yeah, you mentioned the Chicago White Sox, and I saw on the list of people Bill Veeck, and Gene Autry out in California. And as a matter of fact, I think it was you said that Gene Autry said that flying thing, and of course he was an aviator, but was an addiction. And you said, yeah, it's the best addiction to get, or something like that.
Yeah, that's the final sentence in my book. And Gene had invited all of us over to dinner. And, cause he owned the Angels at the time, and we were flying the Chicago White Sox out there to play the Angels. And he invited a whole flight crew over to his house, and we just had a ball, and of course we were seven sheets to the wind by the time that statement. And, he was just an absolute gentleman, and unfortunately he died not long after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. What stories you must have. You know, we also got to get these things on CDs or DVDs too.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I have a DVD of an old guy that used to be a test pilot for Glenn Curtis.
Oh my goodness.
And he flew these old pushers, and he'd take them out and do all kinds of things with them to prove them, and we got him on tape, and I've got it here somewhere. Glenn, what the heck, I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, he was crippled in both legs, and we spent about an hour and 45 minutes talking to him.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So, throughout your flying career, David, you know, there's been, lots of changes and things like that. You know, there's, types of airplanes, flying missions, maybe, the use of, you know, how airplanes are used and things like that. But what's been the biggest change you've seen in aviation that has kind of taken you back a little bit and surprised you?
Well, it's what's going on right now, you know, and I had a conversation with somebody about this just a couple of days about a QB hanger, and it's just absolute Jules Verne today. It's just unbelievable, and my son is a captain for United Airlines, and he had me come up and fly some of the simulators, so I've got time in a 777, and I got time in a 73. And the 777 is, it's just, I mean, you just push buttons and it does everything for you. It's unbelievable. A Cat 3 approach, you sit it on the flight director, it punch in your toga switches on a throttle, sit back with your arms across and let the airplane make the landing. And I mean, that kind of stuff was unheard of in my day. In fact, we thought that was probably going to come in 100 or 200 years, you know. No idea. That it was going to happen the way it did now. I mean, and these automatic computer operated airplanes, they're absolutely marvelous, but they got a real dark side to them that I don't like. And that dark side is that pilot's skills have gone down the tubes. And a good example of it was San Francisco a couple of months ago.
Right.
And I think that the pilot skill should, even though we've got these millions of dollars of computers and fantastic things that you can do in an airplane, pilot skills are still number one. And that's not the only one that pilot skills have caused problems. I won't get into it, but that's the dark side of this, what's going on today. In my day, when we flew those airplanes by hand, and you come in and land, you didn't stop flying the airplane until all four props were stopped and switches turned off and you were walking away from your airplane. The airplane was tied down and you could relax. And that's not so today. It's different today.
Yeah. It's very different. And I think, you know, there's the positive and the negative associated with it. But to your point is, there's the delegation, if you will, to the autopilot or technology or abdication. And if you're delegating, you're still pilot in command. But if you're leaving it, like you say, crossing your arms, then that's when things start to go south, in my opinion.
Well, I agree. And you know, in our day, the company policy on any of those heavy airplanes was you were off autopilot when you hit the outer marker or 1,200 feet. And you didn't go on autopilot until you're straight and level at whatever cruising altitude you're at, and then you could use your autopilot. And of course, those autopilots were caveman style, you know. They were pretty good for us. I thought they were pretty neat, but today you look back at them, and my gosh, they were, you know, caveman.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, there's that's something I'm pretty passionate about too, just having, maintaining, you know, your pilot skills. You know, I think there's definitely a way of teaching people good pilot skills, stick and rudder skills specifically, you know, and using, all this automation and things like that. You know, the way I go about it is, rather than using the autopilot or any of the other automation as a crutch, you kind of think of it as a treat, a cherry on top of a sundae. If you look at the progressive things and you start to see, you know, from your perspective, it's probably like, wow, this thing can do that, you know, but you always have your flying skills to fall back upon. And that's the kind of an excitement and encouragement that people, I think, need to learn and train upon now, rather than just, you know, thinking that the standard option and, you know, that they're just going to, you know, let the high price tag pull them out of it. You know, that's kind of my thoughts. And
I agree with you 100%. I see a huge failure in the general aviation field that way. It's exactly what you're talking about. And, in fact, I go as far as to say that every flight school ought to have a tail dragger out there for somebody to learn how to fly in.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Round instruments, no glass panels, no nothing. This is how you start. And you're going to learn rudder skills and you're going to learn how to fly the airplane and then we'll move you into the more modern stuff. I'm probably an affordable thing to do, but it would sure be nice to see a few flight schools do that. We got one in the field that does it.
Really?
They've got a J3 Cub actually a Super Cub that they, you, it was your choice. If you want to learn to fly, you can start in that or you can go to the other ones.
Do I recall reading in your book that, you saw an Navion and you thought, tricycle gear, that just must be a passing fad, a fad or something like that?
Right. I was just a kid, but, we went for a ride in this Navion and I thought it was cool, but really a weird looking airplane because it sat on its nose.
Yeah.
And I thought this is just a passing fad, and I lived to watch the golden era disappear. I lived long enough to see the old round engine airplanes and the tail draggers and the biplanes and the Howard DGAs and the Stinsons and the stuff just kind of go away, you know. And it's a sad thing. That's one of the sad things in my flying career. I hate to see it, and that's why I'm so happy that there's a lot of people out there bringing those airplanes back.
Yeah. Well, and Al, what's my favorite airplane? I'd call this vintage. Al, what's my favorite airplane?
It's the Beech 17 Stagger Wing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I've never been in one. I had my picture taken one this week at Oshkosh. Tell me what it's like to fly a Stagger Wing.
Well, I do have some time in a Stagger Wing.
I know you do.
It's absolutely a marvelous flying airplane. It's squirrely on the ground. It's a heavy airplane. And, your control pressures are probably a little heavier than a Bonanza. And of course it's got a 985 in the front and it's a symphony when they start. Always has been, always will be for me. And, tax in it is, you're blind. You can't see anything over the front, so you kind of have to S turn while you're taxiing down a taxiway. And you get it, line it up, lock the tail wheel, and go forward. We had a power setting on that at sea level. And I believe it was, 39 inches, something like that.
Wow.
So you could overboost if you went to the firewall. You had to stop short of the firewall at 39 inches and hold a lot of rate rudder. Tail come up. Once the tail gets up, it flies like any other airplane. The aircraft would, true out around, I think it was about 160 knots. For the next day, it was hot rod.
Yes. It's just such a beautiful airplane. As Al knows, that it's kind of a dream, if you will, a bucket list item that I don't know if I'll ever achieve, but, it's just, I look at it and see that's beauty in aviation.
Yeah, it really is. All those airplanes that built in those days were built artistically. They were good looking airplanes. We had an old saying that an airplane that looked good flew good.
I like that, but they all look good.
isn't that what they call the Howard DGA? They're just damn good airplanes.
Yeah, Howard DGA. Never been an AD on that airplane. They've never lost a wing, and it's a wooden spire in that bird. I got time in one of those too. And, again, it's about like that Stagger Wing. They're all of them flew just about the same. But that was a hot rod. That was a wonderful airplane. And, I came about 2 seconds from buying one of them one time and I didn't do it and I regret it. Right now I regret that I didn't own a Howard DGA.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in terms of flying 140 airplanes, you know, today we think about checkouts and all this, and we were just talking about how we should train pilots. Was the checkout procedure to say, okay, I'm going to go fly that Stagger Wing, what did it take to fly in a plane you hadn't flown before that may just be, you know, either complex or airplane single engine land? What was the endeavor?
Well, actually it wasn't in my day. In fact, there were quite a few single-seat airplane, P-51, the F-6F Hellcat, the Wildcat, several other small, Fit Special was one I got in. I'd never flown them before, and I had to do, but they, you know, after you fly so many of them, you know, that, it's really not a problem. And in my day, when you were ferrying airplanes, the FAA didn't have, all they said was get 5 takeoffs and landings in the airplane and they'll issue you the ferry permit. And a lot of times we never even got the 5 takeoffs in it. We'd just go ahead and get in the airplane and go.
I love it.
Not so today. Not so today. The FAA's got their steel fist around your neck.
Actually, I think that's the insurance companies, but one of the two.
Three. I agree. You're right.
Absolutely. It's definitely a lost skill. Yeah, it's fun going to Oshkosh and actually seeing the guys like yourself that talk about that and just getting in a plane and just kind of, figuring it out as you go. But, that's just another thing of, piloting skills can get you allow you to fly anything.
And, yeah.
That's awesome. That's something that, I certainly try to aspire to be. That'd be my dream, be able to do something like that.
Well, I hope it happens for you because I love it. I just, I get they handed me an F6F one time to fly in. So I sat down for about an hour and just went through the manual and got the speeds and you memorize the speeds. That's about all you need to know. And my first takeoff in the airplane, I got to 9,000 feet and I had an engine failure. Well, I didn't say anything about how you get the airplane back on the ground with no engine. And I had a parachute on, but I wasn't going to bail out of it. And actually I went to best glide and it was like any other airplane. I had to slip the thing to get it down on the numbers. I guess you say you're proud of my flying skills. I mean, I wouldn't get in an airplane today and do anything like that. I'm too old. Back in those days, I was pretty sharp.
I'm sure you're still sharp today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In fact, everybody was. I can remember the day somebody go, I got a lot of time with little T-6s, and I'd say, what do you want to go fly and go? I wouldn't do that today, on a bet. I wouldn't do it, But in the old days, everybody were tail dragger pilots, and most of them were Second World War veterans and flew those airplanes. We never had a problem like that. It wasn't some brand new guy in aviation who wants an old airplane that has never flown one before, which there's a lot of that going on today, but I gotta say they handle it good. I mean, they go through the checkout procedures and in fact I put a few of those guys through T-6 training, but they bought a P-51 but I never flown one like that. I've trained a lot of some of these newcomers and they wind up doing great.
Al, how about you? I'd like to try it.
Well,
yeah,
all I can recommend, if you want to do it.
Yeah.
You might have to pay a little scratch down, but it's worth every second of it.
Yeah. No, that is definitely on my bucket list, and I'll be able to do that one after I graduate from the King Air, so maybe a citation or something like that. That sounds like a great time. How about you, Mark? Would you do it?
Absolutely.
All right.
Around. There's people that'll check you out, P-51s. In fact, the two TF-51Ds that we had, which is a training P-51, has a back cockpit. They're both still active. And I don't know what the heck they charge you today. We charge $175 an hour in my day, but that was 200 years ago, And what they charge today, I got no idea. It's probably awesome.
Oh, they charge $75 an hour now.
God, yeah, I believe it. Couldn't call off the turn-up truck just yesterday, Back to 1940s.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You talked
about...
Go ahead, Al.
Oh, go ahead, Mark.
You mentioned an engine failure at 9,000 feet. I remember reading in your book about you were in the North Atlantic and someone forgot to switch fuel tanks and so you lost both engines. And it wasn't a big deal. You obviously switched tanks and turned on.
46, yeah.
Yeah. So after all these hours, and actually I'd love to know how many hours you have, tell us, about some of the more... at a hair-raising, or I'll use the term scary incidents that you had and what you learned from them.
Well, that was one of them. and actually what had happened was they put bad fuel in our, and our after tanks. So there's six tanks on a C-46, your forward main, middle tank, and aft tank. It's not called an aft tank, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
And they had filled up just the aft tank. Thank God it was just the aft tank. And they put bad fuel in there. And so once we got level and started out across the Atlantic, we decided we got about 400, 500, 600 miles out to say we're going to burn off the aft tanks to, you know, keep the weight and balance level. And we switched to the aft tanks, and almost instantly the left engine started backfiring, the right engine started backfiring, and Jimmy had hollered at me, like, back to the main tanks, you know, and I went to the main tanks, and number one started running good, and number two kept backfiring, and finally it quit. And so we feathered it, and we turned around and started back with about a 65-knot headwind.
Hey.
And we're indicating about 120. And it didn't look like we were going to make it. And they launched a patrol plane out there. It was an Albatross, I believe. And they had the Coast Guard on the way out. And the closer in we got, you know, the less the wind was, and we finally figured we could make it. And we did, and we got on the ground, in Newfoundland, at Gander, Newfoundland. We got on the ground, and when they dipped, we dipped the tanks. We had, about 35 gallons a side left, which would have been about 15 minutes of fuel. And, it didn't hit me till we went up to the bar, and we did all the paperwork and everything. We went up to the bar, and I ordered a scotch and beer Boilermaker, you know. And I got that shot of scotch up to my mouth. My hand started shaking so bad I had to put it back down. And it was, I said, hey, I'm going to bed. And I went to bed, and I got the next morning feeling a lot better. And I went in for breakfast, and the bartender had my drink still sitting there for me, had him in the icebox. You need to drink this, man. So, first thing in the morning, my breakfast was a shot of whiskey and a bottle of beer, you know.
Hopefully you didn't go flying.
Yeah,
wow.
And then I've had not that many, you know, but I've had a couple of them that were pretty freaky. I was checking a young girl out in a Waco RNF, 1931 Waco RNF. I told her to give me a full stop landing. I got no brakes in the forward cockpit, which was where I was instructing from. And she came in and got her all set up and had the brakes locked solid. We went right over on our back.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And she's just hanging upside down. Her hair's touching the ground almost, you know. And I said, Gail, I said, I don't want to mention names. Sorry about that. I said, are you hurt? And she said, no. And I was so tempted to undo her seatbelt, let her crash into the ground. I said, now you are. But I didn't do it, of course. But, really, really tore the airplane up bad. And then I had, probably the worst one I ever had was in an F6F Wildcat. I mean an FM2 Wildcat, F4F. And we were doing air shows. And I did quite a few of them in that airplane, and I was making a maneuver that I started to fall out of, and if I continued, I knew I was going to hit the ground, so I split-assed out at 1,000 feet. And I thought, my God, this ain't going to make it, you know. And I could actually see the spot where I was going to hit. Mm. And I just gently pulled it out. My partner, Chuck Meischer, told me a long time ago, and I just went through my mind when this was happening. He says, we were talking about dying, and he says, Dave, he says, there's nothing to worry about dying. He says, if you know where you're going to die, just don't go there. Oh, God. You know, it actually went through my mind, and I told Chuck about it later. He laughed. He says, well, you see, it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I got the airplane back on the ground, and Chuck and I had a couple of beers that night, and he says, Dave, he says, you got to quit this air show stuff. I said, Chuck, you're right, and I never flew another air show after that.
Wow. Yeah, I always heard it wasn't the crash that killed you, it's just the sudden stop at the end.
Stop at the bottom. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, wow. My goodness. So, David, tell me, how many hours do you have?
I've got 15,000 hours.
You've got a lot of different airplanes in 15,000 hours.
Well, we were carrying airplanes, and we were just talking about how somebody wants an airplane buried, and you've never flown it before, so you get in the airplane and go fly it. I did a lot of that. And I flew a lot of airplanes at the first time, and I mean light airplanes and heavy airplanes, too. The first time I ever flew an L-18, I'd never been in one of them before, but I had DC-3 Titan, C-46 Titan, B-17. And I read the manual, got the speeds, and there I go.
Yeah, a different world. That doesn't happen.
That's not actually, 140 is a lot of airplanes. But you got to realize that there's guys around. Chuck Yeager's got over 500 in his logbook. And Paul Mance had 500. Frank Coleman had 500, a little bit more. Bob Hoover has over 500 in his book. So, you know, I'm up there, but I'm not up with the... But the kings, you know.
Yeah, that's all right.
Hey, you're kings to us.
Exactly.
Sure.
So, what's next? You said you still fly a little bit. Are there any bucket list items you have?
You know, not really. The only one I have, I'd love to, for NASA to call me up and say they need some fat, out of shape old pilot to blast off into outer space and see how it does, and I'd be first in line. That's about the only bucket list I have. I would love to fly into outer space.
Well, maybe they're listening.
Yeah, they might be.
Let us know if the call comes in.
Call them. But,
that'd be a riot.
Yeah. I have a lot of wish lists. I wish that, I'm quick diving. I can't. The last dive we did was last year, and it was my last dive, and it was with my daughter. And we went down in cages and watched white sharks for about 3 or 4 days and watched them operate with each other. And that's my last, and I wish that wasn't so. I wish I would love to go. I just love diving. And then it's, my wish list is that I wish I wasn't too old to fly some of these airplanes that we've been talking about. I'd still like to. The memories are great, but there's nothing like being in a cockpit, and I've had to give it up, you know. So that's more of a wish list than a bucket list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've made a fact. You come out to Chicago, you have glass and all that. We'll take you up in an SR-22 or a V-tail Bonanza. We'd love to host you out here if you're ever in the Chicagoland area. Get you back at your old Pewaukee. It was so fun to read about, you know, Northbrook VOR. Actually, I live within a mile of Northbrook VOR, which I read in your book, and that's just kind of, I thought, man, he was here. He was same place that I am now.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah. Is Young Priester Jr. still running that place?
Well, the airport is owned by both Prospect Heights and Wheeling, but the Priesters have a very big presence still at Priester Aviation, but they don't own the airport anymore.
Anymore? Yeah, well, that's probably about right. I enjoyed the. I think it was George Priester's 101st birthday.
Wow!
And
wow,
the next year. But I went to his 101st birthday, and God, it was good to see him again. You know, I knew those guys. I knew George or Young Priester when he was just a kid.
Yeah, actually they just had, I forget her name and I shouldn't, but she was, like an assistant to the...
Mary? Is it Mary? Yeah, I knew her. She was great.
Yeah, she just passed recently and they actually closed the airport to do, you know, the procession, if you will, through all the runways and stuff. They closed the airport for about an hour and a half for the funeral.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I love those guys a lot. They were good guys.
Yeah, well, all in aviation, absolutely.
Yeah, aviation is just, you know, all my friends are aviators. I have a hard time in the general public. But it's just part of it. And part of you guys, too. It's part of everybody that gets in it.
Yeah.
And it's all excellent. I can talk for hours with other aviators.
Yeah, well, again, we share that same thing, too. Our hangar flying happens a lot here in Chicago and with pilots all across the country. although I have to go back. I actually in college was a scuba diver, and you know, when I read about your love of diving, you know, I don't do it anymore, but I had to question your decision making when I read about you chasing after a killer whale. Like everyone else in your school is running away and you're going to try and swim after it.
Yeah.
What's with that?
So, you know, they've never attacked people. And, these other guys freaked out when I saw it and I wanted to get there and take a picture of him, you know. And, he was moving through the water too fast. We couldn't catch up with him, but I've gotten photographs of killer whales before. They're basically harmless. The only fatalities, they got a record of ones that have been caged, you know, put in a, some shoal, you know, where they're not out in the ocean, they're living in a great big pool. And, I think if I was a killer whale, I'd get very depressed and angry after a while.
Yeah.
And, but in the open, I don't know of anybody that's ever been attacked by them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I still find it humorous.
Right, definitely. Exactly. Hey, David, I'm fascinated by your COVID experience flying for the White Sox. I mean, how cool is that? There is a I don't think that did the Chicago White Sox own their own airplane at the time?
Yeah, they did. It was actually a 121 operation. We had two DC-7Bs, and one of them was the Chicago White Sox own airplane. But we used both of them on a 121, and we were called American League Airlines. And, we flew baseball players, baseball teams, we flew football teams, we flew hockey teams, and, I can't remember if we flew any basketball guys, but it was all American League stuff, and they would get a break flying with us over the airlines because we could charge them so much less. All we cared about was breaking even on the cost. And we weren't even trying to make money with the airlines, but and it worked great. I mean, we were paying for those DC-7s. The 7s were a wrong airplane to get. They should have gone to L-188 like the Dodgers did. And the 7, we had 13 engine failures. One season. Only two of them were really bad. One of them was at night when we came out of St. Louis. We had a PRT blow on the number 2 engine, and one of our prize pitchers was sitting right there, and the next thing he knows, he's looking into this ball of fire.
Oh, my goodness.
And he didn't pitch a good game for about 2 months after that. But, and we had so much trouble with the maintenance on that DC-7 that we would have been way better off getting a Lockheed Electra or something like that, because there weren't any jets available in those days.
Right.
Right.
Holy cow. I mean, that would be awesome to fly for American League Airlines. There was I had a short little stint at the airlines, and there was the airline that I worked for, it acquired an airline that did a lot of sports charters. To hear the stories of the old flight attendants and pilots that used to fly those, it was, oh my God, it just sounded like such a good time.
Well, it was, and we got to know most of the players pretty good. There was a few of them like to ride up in the cockpit with us, and the hardest ones were the football players. They were good guys. I mean, we didn't have any problem with them at all with the airplane, but the hotels didn't want them in their hotel. We had a hard time getting them through it, you know, for the game, because they get pretty rough in between the games, and they were big guys and big, strong guys, too, you know.
Yeah.
Football players and were the ones I knew the best, and they were real gentlemanly people. There were some prima donnas, but that's kind of everywhere you go. But most of them were just really good guys, you know.
Wow.
And that was back in the days. Lou Aparicio was one of our passengers, and so that was back in the early 60s, late 50s is when he went on with the White Sox. And so Louis Aparicio and Al Lopez was the head coach. And those are names that, a lot of young guys don't even know those names anymore.
I remember them all. Of course, that's because I was a baseball fan even back in those days. Although I have to admit, I was more on the Cubs side than the White Sox side. But, yeah, you're speaking to me. Yeah, I'm, or at least we're speaking the same language.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of rare today. You know, to find people that do know that. The thing that killed me is that I drove a school bus for about 7 years, the last 7 years, and every December 7th, I'd ask those kids, I'd say, what's the significance of this day? And not one of them ever answered me. Then I'd talk about John Wayne, and none of them ever heard of him. You know, makes you feel old, you know?
Yeah. I'll never forget, and this is one of those things I don't forget. It has nothing to do with flying, but I think it was a teenager and in Chicago, and I mentioned to my neighbor's daughters who were, you know, significantly younger, I mentioned something about Roy Rogers, and they said, who? And I said, you know Roy Rogers and Dale Evans? How is that possible? And that was my, here I was, like I say, a teenager getting my first understanding of what it means to be older than the person next to you.
No kidding. Yeah, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans were our heroes.
That's right. Right next to Sky King, right? And Penny and
Sky King and Long Cassidy and all those guys.
Oh, man. We could do this all night.
We'd go to movies to see usually a Roy Rogers film, and they always started the thing out with the Three Stooges.
Right.
And to this day, I see those guys and I crack up laughing.
Yuck.
Yeah.
I wish I had that sound.
That's awesome.
Well, David, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. Like I said, we could continue this conversation all night, but, you've certainly done a lot, and I know Al and I and all of our listeners just we're starting to envision what you went through and maybe feeling a little sad that we didn't get to go through all of that.
Well, I feel sad that I wasn't in on the very beginning, so we all of us got that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can't tell you how much I appreciate being on your show. It's a great, great help. And books available on Amazon.
And the title again?
The title is Yardarm and Cockpit.
Terrific.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. So head out to Amazon and you can get it, Amazon.com, Yardarm and Cockpit, and it's a great read. So, David, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, could I ask you one more question before we go?
Absolutely.
Could you send me this program on the computer?
Actually, we archive it, so you can actually go to simpleflight.net sometime in the next 48 hours. Al's the one that posts it, and there's a link for Aviation Radio there, and click the archived shows, and you'll have it right there if you want to just get on the online and you can listen to it. And you can, I think,
that's
download
great. Yeah. All right. Well, you guys keep the greasy side down.
Always.
And
absolutely.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate taking your time up to tell my stories. And it's a good hangar flying session.
Yeah, and I actually look forward to maybe sometime picking it up again, even if it's just a phone call between the two of us.
That'd be great. I'm always here. You got my phone number. And I'll always love making new friends.
There you go. Thanks,
right.
David.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We'll talk to you later.
All right. Good night, you guys.
Good night.
All right. Good night. Bye.
All right. You know,
wow. So what's out of the list of all these airplanes that he's flown, you know, excluding the B-17 Stagger Wing, What airplane would you want to fly?
Oh my God, you have to do that to me. Let me pull up the list again.
It's a tough question. I mean, it's a tough question.
Yeah, let me, I'm gonna pull up the list here. Where is it? Right here. 140 as pilot in command. Let's see. I don't even know what half of these are, to be honest. I'm scanning. You know, I mean, I'm going to wimp out on some of these. I've always wanted to be PIC of an MU-2. It's like he said, there's no favorite. You want them all. Let me ask you the question. Actually, I'll change that. because right. I fell in love with it at the show this week, the Howard 500. I would absolutely love to be part of that airplane. How about
you?
That'd be
an incredible airplane. I would, there's one on here that stuck out, and that's the Jet Commander. There's something about that. It's got these, like, little skinny cigar engines. It's kind of an ugly airplane. And I don't know, it seems like the underdog in this list that I would want to fly.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you read his book, it kind of jumps around, but always backed, I think, to the DC-7. And when he talks about at the very beginning, starting the engine, how he counted the blades right before they went contact and engine number 3. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And when he hit, I think it was 9 blades, then turn it on and it would rumble in. You know, I kind of felt like, oh, I can envision myself holding those buttons and seeing it start up, you know, and I flew in some older airplanes, obviously, as a passenger in 121 operations. And, those are good memories.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you had some pretty great memories this week from Oshkosh, and you said that, earlier on the show, before we had David on, that this was your best Oshkosh ever.
It was.
Why?
Well, I'm trying to organize my thoughts because, I just wrote down item after item after item. I experienced Oshkosh in a very different way this year. You know, it was, normally I go for just a day, maybe 2 days, never 2 separate days. And it's like running around and touching everything in the main area, going through hangar A, B, C, D, going on an aeroshell or whatever they call it, the square, going through the Jepson thing. I'm touching all the majors, and I superficially covered Warbird, Vintage, never got to ultralight before this year. I'd been to the seaplane base once when the Icon A5 was flying. Was it a year or 2 years ago? And so to me, it was more superficial on the edges, if you will. So Tuesday for me was a very social day. I was asked by AOPA to be on a panel. So I got to hangar fly with people and talk about flying clubs for the first hour with probably, 50 to 100 people that had a lot of questions. And from there, I bumped into former guests on our show, Don Semple of Angel Flight, actually. Hey, Mark, because I've known him for a while, came up. I stopped by in the main area where Able Flight and our executive director, Charles Stites, was giving away wings to 6 very, let's call them heroes, that earned their wings in the sport pilot category. There was a gentleman that had lost both legs to an IED. There's a paratrooper that became paralyzed. There was a car accident victim, a multiple sclerosis. You know, all these people dealing with handicaps that basically took their legs away, and they had the Sky Arrow there, and they were getting their wings from people like Patty Wagstaff and all. And I quite honestly, I was glad I had sunglasses because I was getting emotional. It was just to see these people overcome such life's challenges, and their love of aviation took them to getting wings where they could fly a plane with them as PIC.
Right.
So we saw that. I met Amelia Earhart. Nice to finally meet her. She was, of course, on the show. Tyson Weiss from 4Flight, he was at the Able Flight thing, so we hooked up there and got to shake his hand. I did meet Chuck Greenhill, who's pulling the airplanes out of Lake Michigan. He has a couple P-51s there. So that was just great. And, of course, over at Cirrus, you know, every year I go shake hands with Dale Clapmeyer, and I know a lot of the folks over there. So that was my social day, and it was just fun. And then I came back on Saturday, and we just walked. We had to actually counted our steps. So I put something 7-8 miles on with the guys I was with, and I went throughout Warbird's area, not just the first row, not just the P-51s, all the way through, and learned so much from the people I was hanging with. We went through the Vintage to see the Cessna 140s and 170s polished to mirror, better than a mirror. I mean, just, they were pristine. Comanche 400 the same way. and to see all these vintage aircraft, then to make to the ultralight, which I'd never seen. And I love the ultralights. I never thought I would. And the helicopter demonstrations, and it got up in the tower. And it was just one thing after another, the Howard 500. And at the end of the day, I didn't want to go. I just wanted to stay and experience more. And that really never has happened before. So I'm sorry to ramble on, but that's just one after another. I'm thinking, this is cool. This is great. So
yeah. It sounds awesome. It's, you know, there's something, a vibe of this, this Oshkosh, that was really, you know, seemed to really take off. And, you know, unfortunately I wasn't able to make it, but I really enjoyed everybody's, tweeting, you know, and everything like that. If you were to look up the hashtag Osh13, it would, you know, on Twitter, it's actually quite awesome. You know, it's very extensive. There's a lot of great tweets, and man, yeah, there's the Oshkosh Award. Did you hear about that, Mark?
The Osh, what?
The Oshkosh Awards?
No.
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 Awesome. There's some of the Twitter aviation celebrities, which I'm going to throw that term out there. I think that there's a bunch of Twitter aviation celebrities, like the Captain Ron Klutz, when he came into town, passing through Chicago, we had I had dinner with him. It was great to meet him.
I got to meet him on Tuesday.
Yeah, isn't it great to connect with everybody? That's,
oh my God,
on
yeah.
our show and on Twitter and all that. You know, he's out there. You know, Amelia Earhart, she definitely has a lot going on with, in the aviation Twitter scene. Rob Mark, Rod Rackick, a lot of guys. I mean, so many people, guys and gals out there that, it was just really enjoyable to watch and, see on Twitter. It made me jealous, but I'm glad they really enabled an Oshkosh fix.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I was, of course, traveling with Todd, famous for myflightblog.com, and he went up in one of the hangars to, I forget the name of the company, I feel so bad about it, but it was a training company that's, you know, kind of hot and all that, and when Todd introduced himself, oh, you know, can I have my picture taken with you, is what he told Todd, or asked Todd. So Todd was kind of the rock star there. So that was really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. It's cool. It's, you get all these little micro aviation celebrities. It's great.
Exactly. And, fell down that memory channel there. I just forgot what I was going to say, but, oh, with Ron, it was really good. You know, he tweeted me and where are you at? And I say, hey, I'm wearing this bright green ugly shirt, which of course was the Flying Club shirt. And this guy comes up to me. He goes, you Mark? He picked me right out. We knew we were going to be in the same general area. And, you know, we were spent a few minutes together, which was great. And the thing that I missed this year, and it was because I went home on the 2 days that I was there for the evening, is the after parties, you know, after it closes down. I always enjoy that, and that was not to be this year. So.
Yeah, that's what one of the Oshkosh Awards was, and, you know, I think it was on Wednesday night. And, you know, there's people saying on Twitter that they're pulling all-nighters, they're having a great time, you know, it's just, I'm like, man, you know, here you are stuck in a hotel room in Baltimore, and, you know, just wishing you were at Oshkosh, you know, at these campsites, and, you know, it just sounds like the right group of people at the right place having a great time.
Well, and, you know, that's, someone mentioned to me, and it may have been part of the group I was with, how lucky we are to live, you know, a short distance either by car or plane from Oshkosh here in Chicago, that we are able to get there, that people, whether it be in Dallas or California or just any extensive distance from Oshkosh, can't say, oh yeah, I'll go over Tuesday and Saturday, you know, and so we're lucky that we had that opportunity. But I think next year, if it's in the cards, I'd love to stay overnight. Camp under the wing, get up at the flight line, to experience that once again. Did you hear any numbers from it? Because I felt like it wasn't that crowded, especially I figured on Saturday it would be all the families, the non-aviators coming in with the kids, and which is great. But I just felt like the numbers were like last year. You know, I have nothing to base this on, although the energy, the positive energy was much, much higher.
Yeah. No, there was a somebody posted a picture on Facebook of a sign in the general theme of Oshkosh this year. And it seemed like, what was it, it's not over yet, don't give up on general aviation.
I saw something like that, yes.
Yeah, so I mean that, like last year it was all about, I can't remember exactly what the theme was, but it was about, you know, achieving your bucket list or something, you know, going to Oshkosh and checking it off your bucket list, which, you know, it kind of has, when you start looking at it, it's like, okay, that's cool, but when you read between the lines, it's kind of morbid, you know? But now, and then the tune last year, Oshkosh, was very sad, you know, when you go to the booths and stuff and people say, hey, you know, we need more people to start flying. We don't know where to get them. It just needs to get better. And now you see this year where you see signs like, it's not over yet, don't give up on GA. You know, it's like, okay, yes, this is the rally. This is where, you know, we get the little Uncle Sam posters that say, we want you.
Yeah, although it still has a little bit of a negative connotation when you say it's not over. You know, we're going to go attack this thing. I guess maybe it's just realistic. We're understanding that, not the odds, but there are forces against us, the economy, the non-flying public, if you will. But yeah, like I say, the positive energy was very, very good. And I hope when I talk to vendors, it seemed like they were having a better year. Even the guys, and I have to plug them, and they want to be on our show, by the way, flythesim.com.
Yeah, that would be great to have on the show.
Yeah, and they'd love to be part of it. Last year, I think they sold 3 sims. And this year he said, yeah, we've got, and that just at the show, he said, we've sold 7, we've sold our 2 ones that we brought here, don't bring back, and we're going to sell a bunch as a result of the show, after the show, because that's when most people buy them. And, you know,
right.
Talk to the guy at Kodiak, and some other one that they just felt the show was good and they were going to get orders. You know, some of these $1 million plus, they don't walk out. Although, did you see Beechcraft? Their sale they got?
Yeah, that's a pretty epic sale that they got. What was it, $1.3 billion in King Air 350 orders?
Yeah, $1.4 billion. And I'm figuring if the sales guy only earned 1%, that's a $14 million commission if you got 1%. Not a bad commission check. Yeah.
No, not at all.
But anyway, I digress. Yeah, $1.4 billion, and some of that was maintenance, some of it's airplanes. I think it was $800 million in airplanes. Is that right? It's somewhere up there. And the rest in maintenance by Kenny Dichter. He's the former vice chairman over at NetJets and founder of Marquee Jet. And,
you know,
in the footsteps of Wade Ierly over at Surf Air, who has said, you know, there's a new private air travel, and he came up with this membership-based PC-12 business that is just going great guns right out of the starting gate. This guy says, hey, you give us annual dues, not of $1,500 a month. He's saying, give us annual dues of $7,250 a year, and then you pay, this is different from Wade, because now you pay per hour, something like just under $4,000 an hour, and you're going to fly in a King Air 350. And I just think it's funny because they say this is the next revolution, and we went from prop to turboprop to jets. Now we're going back to turboprops. But obviously a 350 is just a great airplane. So congratulations to Beechcraft. Congratulations to Kenny Dichter. Congratulations to aviation users. I think this is a huge win for all of us, and it's, I think, just the first of many, or the second of many.
And congratulations to that to that sales guy.
Yeah, right. Oh man,
we need to get him on the show and talk about one flight proposal, $1.4 billion aircraft order, largest aircraft order in history. That's awesome.
Yeah, that one. I've been involved in sales too long to know that. You know, there was probably some change of the comp plan when that one came down. Yeah,
I'm sure.
Hey, I just got a tweet, and I've been checking. I apologize, people. I've been focused on this thing. A buddy over Midwest Flight Lines just commented, "Wish you could have met up with me at Oshkosh 13." And well, certainly we had the pleasure of meeting him in studio not too long ago. So, yeah, same to you, buddy. I'm sorry we didn't meet. There was a few people that reached out to me. I just ran out of time. I couldn't be everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you have to be there for the social events afterwards. And, I kind of made a promise to myself that it hopefully can come true through some hard work and whatnot throughout the course of this year and the next, for the next Oshkosh. But I'm like, you know what? I would love to take 4 days and fly myself to Oshkosh and camp, you know, in my own little airplane and, you know, just really capture the entire essence of Oshkosh. You know, there's something like, you know, we're geographically, you know, I'm blessed, if you will, in Chicago because we could make a day trip out of Oshkosh, but that's not really what it's there for. And, it'd be awesome to fly in and camp and hang out with people. Somebody's kept using the hashtag and I saw it pop up with the Oshkosh all the time. It was called Camp Bacon. And I'm like, I sent a tweet out right before the show, and I'm like, what is Camp Bacon? And somebody replied with, the best place ever to camp. I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to pitch my tent to Camp Bacon next year. You know, that'd be awesome.
Didn't sound very kosher, though.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you don't get the Jewish humor, do you?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
We'll work on that. By the way, the organization, the Beechcraft, sorry to digress, do you know what they're calling it?
No.
Wheels Up.
Oh, Wheels Up. Wheels Up, yeah.
Right. And then they have a concierge service called Wheels Down. And so their members have access to, like, Super Bowl tickets, PGA events, concerts. I mean, they still got to buy them. But they make them available to them at a cost. So I think that, you know, that's not your everyday Joe that's going to spend $4,000 an hour and on top of $7,300. But for that market, I think it's just a wonderful thing to meet the needs of those people that can afford that.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, it's an exciting time. You know, it's very refreshing to see an order like that. Do you know how many airplanes that translated into?
I do. And actually, let me, since we got off of the iPad or our Skype, that translated to, and I apologize, 105 of them.
Wow.
Between now and 2018 or 2018. It'll launch later this year in the Northeast before expanding to other parts of the country. First year dues, by the way, are $15,750, and then they go to $7,250 after that. The deal includes a comprehensive maintenance contract with Beechcraft valued at $600 million, with the remaining $788 million going toward the airplanes. That puts their price at around $7.5 million apiece and makes the deal the largest ever for general aviation propeller airplanes. The Wheels Up King Airs will seat 8 passengers, have more than double the full fuel payload capability of light jets like the Citation CJ2 Plus, and be able to link dozens of popular city pairs with a range of more than 1,700 nautical miles. Pilot training would be provided through flight safety. So just think, they were how close, or emerging out of bankruptcy earlier this year, and then you get a $1.4 billion commitment. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
350, that'd be a fun airplane to... I saw a interview with the CEO of Wheels Up on, I think it was CNBC or something like that, and they showed some interior shots of the options that they bought and tricked the thing, these things out with, and yeah, they decked these things out to the nines. They've got the little touchscreen panels and whatnot on them there. I think they're all equipped with Wi-Fi, and it should be a real nice ride.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. And actually, just changing the subject only slightly, I went on YouTube and I did a look at like G5s and things like that. And for, you know, 23 million, whatever the number was, they give you a little tour of what you can buy for $23 million with the bedroom, the bathroom, the little sliding door to the private conference room. And if you want a dream, it's just so much fun to watch those YouTube videos of the, how these things are pointed on the inside for that set. You know, you talked about, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to change the subject now to Amelia.
Go ahead, yeah.
All right, well, so I mentioned I met Amelia after she was on the show Super Bowl Sunday. And obviously just as gorgeous in person as you see on TV or on the Internet. And if she's listening, Amelia, you know you are. So anyway, but very pleasant, you know, a great smile, great energy. But I have to tell you, I thought she was going around the world in a different airplane. And she kind of hinted that it maybe wasn't going to be a different airplane, you know, in a previous conversation. And I don't want to bring up another manufacturer, but it was a four-seat propeller airplane. And now she's moved to the Pilatus. And Pilatus is a sponsor. Jep's a sponsor. Aberdeen Jewelers, or I'm mispronouncing the name. I apologize. But they're sponsors of a lot of great things, that jeweler. But Jep and Pilatus are the main ones. Going around the world in a Pilatus BC-12, I mean, it's neat, but I would almost prefer her, and if it were me, I would love to do it in a four-seat piston airplane, maybe just because I'm so GA and the small end of GA.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. You know, that's, I would think going around the world with a Pilatus would be a riot.
Oh, yeah.
It'd certainly be a lot of fun. But yeah, I think that if you want to add a little bit more of a challenge to it, I guess it would be, you know, to have a four-seat piston airplane. I would imagine it's definitely doable. Or no, it certainly is doable. And, it was on the flight down to Chile, when I was in flying down there, you know, I was talking with the other gentleman that was flying, the second airplane. And he said, you know, what's interesting about what we're doing is that, you know, we have a mission profile for the airplane that we're flying, and we're just completely ripping that barrier down, you know, and you start flying that. So, you know, there's some cool, mystique, you know, element of, you know, just doing flying a smaller airplane and having it do a mission that it wasn't probably originally designed for. And even the Pilatus isn't designed for that, but it's certainly got a few lights up on it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to minimize the event. I think it's great for general aviation. If anything, there's maybe a little jealousy because I wish I could do it. But,
yeah.
You know, she's perfect for GA. And it's just going to be a blast. I hope after that, and she's leaving in June, to do this, and she's getting a special PC-12, they're putting some fuselage fuel tanks that's going to extend the range by about another 400 miles from 1,800 to 2,200 nautical miles. And she's got 14 stops over 14 days. So that's a lot of flying. So it's probably going to be pretty draining, but I imagine adrenaline is going to get her through. And as you and I both know, she's got so much energy. She'll come through it with flying colors, and she's going to see. For example, originally planned stop at Karachi, Pakistan, other politically sensitive destinations on the original Amelia Earhart list. Those are going to be bypassed, obviously. but she is going to fly right over near Holland Island on the schedule. So, you know, it's a distant relative. I think it's more that she's a namesake and a woman in aviation, that it's really going to be a great event. And we wish her all the best and know she will do phenomenal, and we'll all be the winners in the end.
Right. You know, there was a, if you go to her website for this, I believe it's the Amelia Project, forgive me, I'm not at my computer at the moment to give the exact website address, but the person that she's flying around the world with, her co-pilot, is a gentleman named Patrick Carter, who right. is the CEO of N-Flight Cam. And the funny thing is I'm starting to read his bio, and I'm looking at that name, and I'm like, that sounds so familiar. And I start reading, and it says Patrick Carter was from Mountain Home, Arkansas, which is where I got my private pilot's license in high school.
No way.
And I'm like, holy cow, I took flying lessons with this guy.
great.
The brother. Yeah, him and his little brother, and his dad owned a Lance. His little brother, do you remember the Lightspeed Denali headset?
Yes.
They were like those yellow ones.
Yep, yep.
Yellow
ones. Yep.
Yes, they had, the yellow Denali headsets, while we were learning how to fly. And, so it was hilarious. I'm sitting there, I'm like, holy cow, I can't believe it. You know, first of all, you know, N-Flight Cam is this great company. Second of all, you know, Patrick is the CEO of N-Flight Cam. And third of all, he's doing this around the world project. Like, holy cow.
It's awesome. It's such a small world.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a very good friend who flies a 310 that landed at, and stayed overnight at Oshkosh this year. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Guess who he was parked next to, who had a 414, wingtip to wingtip, and they were next to each other for some 48 hours and finally met each other on the way out. Another former guest of ours. Think communication.
Dave Pasco?
Yep. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And he didn't even bring us up in talking to Renee. He said, oh, yeah, I know Todd, and he mentioned one other person in our club. But he didn't mention you or me.
Wow.
But, I mean, all those planes, and all of a sudden, wingtip to wingtip, two twin-engine Cessnas, and they finally meet each other as they're packing up. He goes, yeah, I do liveatc.net. So it really was kind of a homecoming for our former guest to get to meet him or have some connection with him.
Yeah. Does he own a 414?
I don't know. I guess so. Renee didn't remember all the names. He just all of a sudden started talking about, yeah, he's live ATC and knew Todd. And again, there's someone else in our club that he knew. That's escaping my mind. But, it was all, of course, through the connections. And I said, was it Dave? And he goes, yeah, that was his name. And he was there in a 414. So I don't know if he was renting it or he owns it.
That's pretty cool.
It's better than really pretty cool. That's really cool.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. I need to get I'm sold.
Okay.
I wish I could buy tickets for Osh 14.
And why is that a change? So what was it, a week ago or 2 weeks ago? What were you saying about Oshkosh?
No, I don't know. I kind of lost the wind out of my sails to go.
Yeah, you did. And now where are you?
They're fully inflated and, full with gale force winds.
I just played Hallelujah.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know why I kind of lost a little, I felt petered out. Maybe it was, I knew that I wasn't really going to be able to go, just based on my, you know, work schedule in the King Air and everything. We're on the road pretty significant, and then I had a few other, flying commitments to take care of, which basically took up the whole week of Oshkosh.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was kind of with you, and I think it's because I was a little down because there wasn't going to be military jets, although There were some there, not through the military, like the gentleman that owns, what's his name, that owns the Harrier? Nelms. And then, there were some, L-39s there, for the Black Diamond guys, and all that. So you at least got to hear a turbine. And I had never really even stopped and watched the whole Torah, Torah, Torah thing that some of the days started off with. And I did this time. I invested myself more this year, and I let the excitement come to me rather than saying, oh, I've seen this, all this stuff before.
And right.
Yeah. Oh, guess who else was there?
Right.
Not that we know, but that was the first guy that he came, the first time he's done anything in the United States. Jetman. The guy that puts the jetpack, the wing with the four engines on.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
And he had, went up in a helicopter, hanging on the outside of the helicopter, had his feet on the landing skid, and just hung on. Then they light his engines, and he could take him up to 6,500 feet. And he had a camera on him, the helicopter did, and I think there was, well, no, the helicopter was his chase plane. So you could see this little dot with smoke coming out of it, at 6,500, but then you could get the view up on the Jumbotron. So that was exciting, you know, just to, first time he's been out of the international area to bring that show here. So,
nice.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him. Good for all, everybody that made it to Oshkosh. Made a great, great, great time. And, you know, thank you to everybody for all the Facebook posts and tweets and everything. From people that are out on the road or who aren't able to make it, that goes a long way.
Yeah, well, and I had a laugh when we kind of rubbed it in when Todd sent you a tweet or whatever that said, too bad you weren't here for the free P-51 rides.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man, bummer.
Yeah, well, we took a picture in the tower, Oshkosh Tower, and in the missing man formation, leaving a spot for you, I think. So
nice.
Next year.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You bet.
Thank you.
You bet. So what do we got next week?
Yeah, we're on this big air show hype, and we have a gentleman named John from Rome, Georgia, coming on the show. He has he's very entrepreneurial, and you know, leading up to Oshkosh, we've been talking about the air show and how we think it's kind of this, you know, fizzling out thrill, if you will, and John has started to put all of his life savings into this company where he hosts air shows, and he does everything to do it to make the air show right, everything from booking the guests to VIP tents and just making sure all the guests are really comfortable. And things like that. It's almost kind of like a for-profit air show, if you will, company. And, you know, which I think is actually not a bad thing because, you know, it's, you end up having a really, really nice experience. He can deliver, you know, the air show experience and exactly how you want to experience it. And if I say the word experience again, I'm probably going to be, people are probably going to start making another drinking game out of that.
You're right. Awesome experience. We got two words now. Al Waterloo experiences. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
Absolutely. Exactly. What's going on? You know, we got to have a contest. We got to have a contest for Al Waterlooisms. By the way, did we get a tweet from your mom today?
I don't know. I think she's probably out of cell phone range. Somewhere in northern Michigan. We'll have to give her the benefit of the doubt. But I do want to give a shout out. This is a personal shout out, and I know that she's not with me. But the very first Simple Flight Aviation Radio listener.
Hey, wait a minute, Al, get your voice back. You're kind of muffled. Go back to however you were holding the phone before.
Oops.
Yeah, go
is
for
that
it.
Better?
Much better. So give a shout out to one of our first listeners ever.
For the very first aviation, Simplified Aviation, radio listener, and that was, my Aunt Dee out in L.A. She's 87 years old, and this week she heard she's had some complications. So, but yeah, just hoping for the best for her. But she was listener number one.
Wow. Okay, Auntie, get better soon. And
yeah.
Certainly we're all hoping for that to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Anyway, but yeah, so we got a list of great people coming up, like John from Rome, Georgia, and Kermit Weeks.
Yeah.
You know who he is?
I know the name. Isn't that funny? I of course do. And I'm trying to remember. I mean, he's kind of famous. I don't remember how I know that. Go ahead.
Yeah, he has the Fantasy of Flight Museum in between Tampa and Orlando, with all the different types of airplanes that, you know, make us jealous. And there, you know, David Allen has this long list of airplanes, but you know, nearly this guy's entire collection is so exotic. You know, it's really, really amazing. We got the founders, the curators and founders of pilotfitness.com coming on in a couple weeks, as well as we got a bunch of other feelers out there, so a lot of good guests lined up.
FlyTheSimIToldYou.com wants to be on. They'd ask me, and I did not run into Gulfstream Girl. We've got to get her on the show, so we'll get that going as well. And
yeah.
So we got a lot of exciting things as year two now gets underway for Simple Flight Live Aviation Radio.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, buddy. Well guess
hey,
what? It's 2,200 hours. So.
Guess what? We kept the ship upright and the greasy side down, as David Allen says, even though we're probably like that picture. We're watching our engine go up in flame right after takeoff.
Go ahead.
We got it feathered, and now we're on approach.
Yeah, it was funny when he talked about the wooden props on the bamboo bomber. You don't feather wooden props. I forgot about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, so our thanks to David Allen. Wonderful conversation, and 140 airplanes and a list of people. And he says that doesn't put him in the top tier, but it does in my book. And just what memories and all the things. I really felt like I was starting up that Sagra wing and taxiing it down the way he kind of brought us into that. And he
read
his book.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking now for his book name again. Do you have it so we can plug it one more time on Amazon.com?
Yardham and Cockpit.
All right.
By David Allen.
By David Allen, A-L-L-Y-N. All right, my friend. Like you say, shiny side up, pointy end forward. And we will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Good night, everybody. Blue skies.
All right. Good night.
And tailwinds.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.